The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Whistling some comforting tune for you. You can do this hard thing. You can do this hard thing. It's not easy, I know, but I believe that it's so. You can do this hard thing.
In this morning's prelude, You Can Do This Hard Thing, Carrie Newcomer offers a moving testament to a precious gift she received during challenging times in her life. In her childhood struggles to master math, in her uncertainty and self-doubt in setting out into the world, in suffering life's inevitable disappointments and setbacks. That gift, that precious gift, was the presence of people who were there for her. People who coached her, encouraged her, who were just willing to listen to her. In short, people who gifted her, who graced her with their presence. Good morning, everyone. I'm Jerry Lazzaro. For those of you who don't know me, and even for those who do know me, I'm still Jerry Lazzaro. Right? I chair the worship committee here at the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. Our fellowship is a principle-based, truth-seeking, justice-seeking, welcoming faith community. Our minister is Reverend Andrew Weber, who returns to the pulpit next Sunday. In the interim, since he last led worship here, we've practiced shared ministry with shared pulpit services like the one this morning. Our services can differ a great deal from week to week, so we encourage visitors to attend several services to get a true feel for the worship experience here at this fellowship. Today, our service continues a tradition here at the Thomas Paine UU Fellowship, namely observing the Thanksgiving holiday with a worship service expressing thanks for gifts we've given and or received in our lives. For several years now, the gift we express gratitude for is suggested by our monthly Soul Matters theme. This year, that theme is presence, P-R-E-S-E-N-C-E. Thus, the title of our Thanksgiving Weekend 24 service is Let Us, You Use, All Be Grateful for the Gift of Presence. The word presence has many meanings, but as you may recall from the service description in the Beacon newsletter and in weekly announcements, we're looking at presence today in the sense of showing up in a certain place at a certain time as a gift, a priceless gift we give to others. Being there for them to celebrate a success, to provide support and encouragement during a rough time, to bear witness to a struggle, or even just to make time to be with them. Our presence can make their lives and our own lives more fulfilled and meaningful, and conversely, their presence, their being there for us, may prove to be a cherished gift for which we could never thank them enough. Thich Nhat Hanh, the Buddhist monk, global spiritual leader and peace activist, speaks of presence as embracing others by extending the spiritual practice of mindfulness to include them and their experiences. But how does this spiritual practice we call presence manifest itself? How do we experience presence in our lives? In a practical, concrete way, what does being present mean? And what effect does it have on us and on others? Today, we're fortunate to have two members and a friend of our fellowship to help answer those questions, Cindy Westfall and Karen McCann and Jeff Fisher. They'll be delivering this year's Thanksgiving weekend message. And we welcome all of you, present here in this sanctuary or online, to share this special worship experience, whoever you are, wherever you may be on your spiritual journey, on your life journey, whatever you must in conscience, truly, and responsibly believe, however you identify or express your gender, whomever you love, whoever loves you. You know that you're welcome here and warmly invited to worship with us this morning and every Sunday morning. Well, let's now, as we do whenever we gather to worship, light our chalice. The chalice and the flame together symbolize our free faith. They signify, among many things, our openness to the wisdom of many ages, many traditions, and our commitment to keep the light of truth, the warmth of compassion, and the flame of liberty and justice burning within ourselves and throughout our world. This morning, with words crafted by Katie Gelfand, Director of Religious Exploration at the First Unitarian Universalist Church of New Orleans, let's light our chalice as a symbol of gratitude for community, for the fellowship we share. Please recite with me responsively. Gratitude for the sense of presence we experience in fellowship with others. We light our chalice as a symbol of gratitude as we celebrate the abundance of our lives together.
In this sanctuary, we are the
May we be grateful for the ways we nourish and uplift each other, sharing this hallowed time together that sustains us. And now, as we do each week, we light a peace lamp, a beacon of light, we hope, in a world that we know is experiencing much violence. And even when one thing seems to settle down a little bit, like the Israelis and Hezbollah, according to reports, reach some kind of agreement, then something boils up in Syria, and of course, the terrible struggle goes on in Ukraine. But we light this peace lamp because of our aspiration that we hold in our hearts. May peace be with us. Okay, and now, please join in singing our gathering song, hymn number 359, We Gather Together. This hymn, by the way, observes tradition and infuses it with contemporary meaning for you use. Modern-day Unitarian Universalists Dorothy and Roger E. Kager Sangus wrote the words, and their words are set to a tune from a 17th century Dutch hymn book. And this tune for centuries has been a musical setting for themes of Thanksgiving. The choir of the First Unitarian Church of Baltimore, Maryland will lead us in singing hymn number 349, We Gather Together. And if you'd like to rise in body as well as in spirit to sing, please move to the back or side of the sanctuary so as not to obstruct the view of others of the screen where the song lyrics will appear. Before we proceed to the heart of today's service, let's take a little time to honor another tradition observed in our fellowship and in many, many UU communities throughout the world. That is, let's acknowledge our Christian roots by recognizing the beginning of Advent, the four-week period leading up to Christmas Day. We honor that tradition by lighting an Advent wreath. Now, some UUs identify as Christians, others, probably most others, don't, right? And among us here at TPUF, we have Jewish UUs. We love to call them affectionately Junitarians. We also have UU Buddhists, UU Humanists, UU Pagans, as well as flat-out Unitarian Universalists who don't see the need for any hyphens or qualifiers to identify themselves religiously. Together, we covenant to grow and change as we mutually engage in spiritual practice. So I suggest we approach Advent from its most ancient origins and from a more universal perspective. The ancient origins, of course, would relate all the way back to the time leading up to the solstice, right? And that universal perspective would be as a time of anticipation, of expectation, of preparation. We Unitarian Universalists may ask ourselves, what are we waiting for and preparing for in our own lives and in the life of the world? The Advent wreath has five candles to help us reflect on that question. Three candles represent hope, peace, and love. The pink candle represents the anticipated joy of the season. We got an extra one up there. We need a little more joy in our lives. The white candle represents life-giving, life-sustaining light. On Sundays this month, we'll light a candle on our Advent wreath, lighting the fifth and final candle on Christmas Eve. And as we light each candle, let's renew our commitment to be fully present in the moment with one another, with ourselves, and with the source and sustainer of life as we interpret that to be. On this first Sunday of Advent, we light a candle for hope. And I encourage you to take a few quiet moments to reflect on your hopes not yet realized, not yet born, so to speak. What hopes do you carry in your heart? May the light of our first Advent candle help us bring more hope into the world. I have the distinct pleasure now of turning the pulpit over to Jeff Fisher. Yes, Ryan's it, right, okay. Let us sing our children. Oh, and is that Logan back there on the floor? Lucas, Logan, hey guys. All right. Okay, let's sing them off to their classes. Go now in peace, go now in peace. May the spirit of love surround you everywhere, everywhere you may go. Now I have the pleasure of turning the pulpit over to Jeff Fisher, our first speaker this morning. I'm just so pleased that Jeff agreed to participate in our service this morning. Jeff and his wife, Elise, are relative newcomers to our fellowship, but we've already noted and appreciated their presence here. Jeff?
Morning, and thank you. My name is Jeff Fisher, and it's interesting, this topic of being present. And, you know, a little over 30 years ago, my life changed pretty dramatically. I had spent many years in the United States Navy, and I left the Navy at that time. And so new career, new jobs. And at that time, I also became a single parent. And, you know, my life in the Navy, I was a chief bosun mate, if anybody's familiar with the Navy. My job was to not be present, but to give orders and to basically tell people what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. And then I left the room and my subordinates made that happen. And I was not a very likable guy. That was not my job. My job was to be a taskmaster. So when I left the Navy, as a single parent, I was learning a new vocation. I was learning how to fit into the world as a civilian. You know, my son, as you know, when I say I was a single parent, I was only with his mother for a short time. So my visitation when he was like 3 months, 4 months, and so forth, was a totally new experience for me and not one I was prepared for. And then when he became a toddler, and I'd watch my son, he would say, "Daddy, come watch me. Come see what I can do." And my son, as a toddler, taught me how to be present. You know, he would tell me, "This is what I want you to do. This is how I want you to interact with me." And, you know, I share with friends all the time, my son taught me how to laugh. Because again, my job was I had a very rigorous attitude towards life, rules, and you know, I didn't laugh a lot. And my son taught me that, and he taught me how to be present. And I learned to, when I didn't know what exactly he wanted me to do, I learned how to ask questions. You know, why do you want me to sit here and not over there? Because he was very demanding. He was very specific on what he wanted me to do. And, you know, at the same time, I had also gotten involved with a fellowship of people not unlike you guys. And, you know, they taught me some basics about things. It was not a religious organization, but they taught me about things like the St. Francis prayer. And one of the things about St. Francis was when he said it's better to understand than to be understood. And that resonated with me. You know, I grew up a little differently than a lot of people in a single parent household, and I didn't learn how to do a lot of things that most folks learn. And this idea of understanding, that was a new concept to me. And, you know, in this fellowship that I was a member of, I basically became a mentor to a number of men. And in so doing, these are very different people. And I also had colleagues at work that were younger than me that looked to me for experience and advice and things of that nature, and they would talk to me about things going on in their life. And, you know, some of these people, I didn't have a clue where they were coming from, and I learned to ask questions to try to understand, first of all, why they were talking to me about these things, because I didn't quite get it. And so they would talk to me, and I would ask them, like, What do you hope to gain from us having this conversation? Are you looking for me to tell you what to do? Do you just want to have somebody to talk to? And I learned that people came to me for different reasons at different times. And when they came to me, I learned from other people how not to judge, how not to put my concepts and my perspective of life on what they're saying to me. And one of the things I also learned to do is to make very clear that I don't give advice. I simply share my experience, because that's the only real true knowledge I have. I'm not a medical doctor, I'm not a lawyer. And a lot of times as human beings, we want people to give us answers to what's going on. We want people to tell us what to do. And you know, I learned that being present is understanding that not everybody thinks the same way I do. And it's really important for me to understand that and to ask those questions, how can I help? And when I ask that question, it's so simple. And that's what I would ask my son, how can I help? What can I do for you? And then when people would say, you know, this is, I just want you to listen. I learned how to do that. When people would say, you know, I'd like a different perspective, I learned how to do that. And it's a process that's never ending. You know, it's really difficult sometimes to not put our own ideas and what we think onto other people. And again, for me, I'm just so grateful that I've learned how important it is to understand rather than be understood. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Cindy Westfall. Cindy has been with us for several years now.
Or so. 7 months. It seems like several years.
And she's a member of our worship committee now, and she will address that topic today.
Thanks, Jerry. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Cindy Westfall. I've been here about 20 months now, and some of you might have remembered a few months ago, one of the first things that I shared was Aunt Reverend Weber actually asked me to share an experience I had with several people, patients of mine who passed away. And I was present for their passing, which was such an honor. That may sound odd, but it was, because I was present there, but I also felt a presence that was profound to me. It's life-changing to me. Today, I would like to talk about people that have been present in my life. So we've all gone through difficult times in our lives, and during these times, the presence of those around us is sometimes evident and sometimes not. Those around us include loved ones, strangers, acquaintances, and the divine. When I think of presence, I'm reminded of the poem, Footprints of the Sand. How many people have heard the Footprints of the Sand, right? So when I was looking it up to find the actual poem, apparently there have been many people that have taken responsibility for, taking credit for writing the poem, but really Mary Stevenson wrote the poem. And if you will, I just, in place of the Lord, I put the Great Spirit in honor of November being the Indigenous Peoples Month. Although now it's December, but it's close enough. So I put Great Spirit in there instead of the Lord. One night I dreamed I was walking along the beach with the Great Spirit. Many scenes from my life flashed across the sky, and in each scene, I noticed footprints in the sand. Sometimes there were two sets of footprints, and other times there was one set of footprints. This bothered me because I noticed that during the low periods of my life, when I was suffering from anguish, sorrow, or defeat, I could see only one set of footprints. So I said to the Great Spirit, "You promised me that if I followed you, you would walk with me always. But I've noticed that during the most trying periods of my life, there have only been one set of footprints in the sand. Why then, when I needed you most, you have not been there for me?" The Great Spirit replied, "The times when you have seen only one set of footprints in the sand is when I carried you." So I was carried not too long ago. By many people. We've all gone through those difficult times. A few years ago, I found myself referring to this poem in a meeting I was holding with my team in the midst of the third surge of COVID patients, actually, in the winter of 22. My team was exhausted from not only supporting their families and themselves, but also coming into work every day and holding up their exhausted teams. I referred to this poem because as a metaphor of what they had done for their teams and what they had done for each other and what they had done for me, frankly, holding me up. Upon reflection in hindsight, we can see clearly those who were present in our lives during difficult times, but sometimes in the moment, we don't see them. We may feel them, but we don't see them. In February of 2020, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. The ensuing weeks, I spent going for tests and consults with my physicians, and then everything stopped and closed, including surgeries. Although elective surgery stopped, but because I had cancer, my surgery was allowed to go ahead. So on March 27th, 2020, I went in for surgery in my hospital. The same day, my hospital received its first COVID patient. I returned to work after a week because I couldn't stay home. Not because nobody allowed me to stay, but just I couldn't stay home. Everything around me became rather surreal. And I returned to work actually just in time for our first of three major COVID surges, COVID patient insurges in mid-April. In May, I went for daily radiation treatments and started medication in June. In December, during our second surge and 2 weeks before the vaccine came out, I came down with COVID, which was community acquired, and then battled long COVID for several months after. Frankly, it was all a blur because unbeknownst to me, I had brain fog. But when you have brain fog, you don't know because you have brain fog. Months turned into years of running a hospital during surge after surge. After the pandemic appeared to be waning, I resigned my position as Vice President of Patient Care Services in 2023. Kendall and I started attending TPUF 2 months later. Today, I have time and space to reflect. In this reflection, I see all those who held me up and carried me through this time. My husband, Michael, some of you have met him and some of you haven't. He was always at my side, handling everything at home while he worked as well, so I could work long hours. Kendall is at my side, going for a hike and asking me serious questions like, are you sure you want to go back? I call her my baby Yoda. My son Trey, whose logical mind helped me put things in perspective. My daughter Michaela, whose presence was quiet and full of loving concern. They carried me through, even as I did not know it. The presence of the divine was also very real to me and was with me every step of the day, or every step of the way, in offering leadings of what I needed to do next. My drive to keep working was not only purposeful, but frankly, it helped me cope with my cancer diagnosis. It was a blessing, truly. It kept my mind off of me and outwardly focused. This drive too was a leading, I feel, in retrospect, a divine leading. The purposeful work of leading teams through the pandemic kept my mind from the what ifs of my diagnosis. A couple of years later, my surgeon said to me, I think it was in 2022, maybe 2023, she said, you know, you never really dealt with your diagnosis. And I looked at her knowing full well that I hadn't. I just kept working. But I did, because that's the way I dealt with it. I did deal with it in my own way, in the presence of my loved ones, colleagues who were there, and the Great Spirit. And as with all things, sometimes we do not know until after the fact the full impact of the presence of others and the presence of the divine. Joni Mitchell, we don't know what we got till it's gone, right? Big Yellow Taxi, one of my favorite songs. Sometimes we don't know until after, because hindsight's always 20/20. Last winter, I was standing on a mountaintop looking at the utter beauty of the blue sky and the miracle of nature. And in that moment, I felt an emotional surge that I thought at first was a heartache. I realized it was the divine presence again holding me up because I was at a crossroads. It was an incredibly almost pressure in my chest, in my heart. And again, in retrospect, I realized that it was my higher power, the divine, the great spirit, holding me up. Sometimes we only need to look without judgment to see, and we only need to be present to feel the presence. Thank you.
Our final speaker this morning is our own Karen McCann, who you know from our writers group and has shared some of her stories with us. This story, I think you'll find quite interesting and amusing and meaningful.
Good morning. Good morning. Karen McCann here. My story is called Hostessing My First Thanksgiving. It was around 1970. My husband and I lived in a large apartment in Lansdale. We'd invited some family over for Thanksgiving dinner. It was to be my very first experience at cooking the entire meal, and for my in-laws, no less. I bought a turkey, and my husband, Jack, reminded me to remove the giblets. What? There's a package in there for me? I was so glad he said something, or I would have stuffed that bird and cooked the bag of giblets right along with the turkey. I got recipes from my mother. She and Daddy had moved to Florida for retirement. I got cranberry sauce, stuffing, and green bean casserole recipes. And I made those along with mashed white potatoes, candied sweet potatoes, and Parker House dinner rolls, all the wonderful things we love for this holiday. Jack's mother and his aunt, who lived together, came, as did one of his brothers and his wife. My sister and her husband were there, so there were to be eight of us for dinner. My table sparkled. I'd gotten dishes and gorgeous blue lead glass goblets as wedding presents. I already had my sterling silver, a pattern that had been chosen when I was born, and my grandmother and aunt had bought a piece for me for each birthday and Christmas. I finished off the set with wedding money, gifts, because I love the pattern so much, and I still do. It's called Damask Rose. I used a beautiful tablecloth my mother-in-law had gifted us, and it all looked so lovely. We had an early American table and large chairs, which easily fit into our large dining room under the chandelier. Super, perfect setting. I was so excited. Our kitchen was very small, and there were no microwaves at that time. This magnificent meal was all done on the one range with an oven cavity just big enough to fit the stuffed bird. I know we don't stuff the bird these days, but way back then we did just that. Jack poured some wine and then helped me get all of the side dishes out to the table onto hot pads. The last entry for the center of the table was to be the turkey. Jack said he'd be honored to carve it. The gravy I'd made in the roasting pan was on simmer. I called everyone to the table. I declared it was now time for Tom Turkey to join us. As I finished my sentence, a loud crack and an explosion occurred. The ceiling chandelier had exploded, sending shards of glass raining down on my beautiful table. Everyone screamed and yelled until we realized what had actually happened. Luckily, not one person was yet seated. They were all on the way to the table when this happened. Thank the universe for small favors. This could have been so much worse. I started crying. There were shards in every side dish, every wine glass, every water goblet, on every chair cushion. What a mess. The guys folded the tablecloth up over top of all the dishes of food and glassware and gingerly carried it very carefully through the apartment out the back door. They threw all of the food into garbage bags, rinsed the dishes with the hose out there, and brought back all of the dishes and glasses to be placed into the dishwasher. I was still crying when they returned. Amazingly, not one dish, plate, or glass had broken. My mother-in-law came out into the kitchen, put her arms around me, and asked if I had any bread. I said, yes, we have both wheat and white bread. She said, good. After your sister is finished vacuuming, let's get another tablecloth. Let's put the turkey and the gravy on the table. Jack can carve the bird, and we will have hot turkey sandwiches with the stuffing from the bird for Thanksgiving dinner. I mean, this woman saved my life because I just could not even think straight. She was present for me, my mother-in-law. My sister's husband was on a ladder, removing the base of each bulb in the now ruined chandelier. And he would leave the task of removing the actual fixture to my husband. He asked what wattage light bulbs were in the chandelier. My husband said they're 40s. I said, no, they're 60s. I just changed these out this morning because I wanted more light in here. They both looked at me and one said, well, that's the problem, Karen. The chandelier is marked for no higher than 40-watt bulbs. I felt like crying some more, but I didn't. This was all my fault, and I felt terrible. But I was so thankful that no one got hurt. All of the glass that we could see was cleaned up, and so we had our hot turkey sandwiches with gravy on everyday plates and wine in different non-matching glasses. The turkey, stuffing, and gravy were delicious, and everyone agreed it ended up to be a lovely day. Later on, when it was dark out, Jack and I used flashlights to go around the entire room searching for more shards, which we did find in the deep shag carpet. I hope your Thanksgiving was not as dramatic. Thank you.
Thanks. Never have to worry these shared pulpit things, you know. You never know what people are going to say, but when it comes to the people in this congregation, boy, they never disappoint. They really enthrall. It's now time for Matters of the Heart. I believe Alex is conducting it this morning.
Well, as we talk about presence here this morning, let's take a moment to be present as a community and as fellowship. If you'd like to take a moment to come up and share a joy or a sorrow with us all this morning, please take a moment to do so and start with your name.
While people quick gather their thoughts, we'll have a short musical interlude here, and then both folks in person and on Zoom will be able to share, and I think everyone here is a familiar face who knows the process. We can bring this time of sharing to a close, and as we often do, we will sing Spirit of Life, and the words will appear on the screen momentarily.
This morning for the insight that they provided into this idea of presence. And the gift of presence is certainly a gift to be thankful for. As we process the words we heard today, let's think of our own experience of presence and be grateful for times when we could be present for others, as well as for times when others graced us with their presence. By the way, our English words gratitude and grace derived from the same Latin root. No wonder why, in my mind, the two intersect on an emotive and spiritual level. When we're grateful for the presence of others, we're filled with grace. When we're filled with grace, we're moved to gift others with our presence. And we're more likely to realize how much we have to be grateful for. So let's create as much space as possible in our lives to experience presence, both as a giver and receiver of this precious gift. And that appeal leads us right into our closing song this morning, hymn number 128, For All That Is Our Life. This song reminds us to give praise and thanks for all that is our life, for services we give, as well as for needs which others serve. It also affirms that we're bound in covenant to build the common good, as well as to make our own days glad. The Community Unitarian Universalist Congregation of White Plains will lead us in singing hymn number 128, For All That Is Our Life. You'd like to stand, as we said, we can move off and not block the screen.
And take our own place of heaven.
resolve not only to experience gratitude for the gift of presence, but also to express that gratitude in deeds and words. When we express gratitude, we increase and extend its physical, emotional, and spiritual benefits. Extinguishing our chalice may signify the end of this hallowed time together, but it's never meant to signify the end of our efforts to nourish and uplift others with our presence. So let's now vow to remain open to experience and express gratitude, to carry our heartfelt thankfulness into the world, to share with those whose lives we touch and whose lives touch ours. So please remain with us now for announcements regarding programs and activities here at the Thomas Paine Fellowship, and for our postlude, and for a time of informal sharing in the lobby or online.